From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
If you're so certain that this 90 days is going to, their investigation will be over and
I'm
we won't be interfering with
it. I'm looking off the gentleman's concept, what he said. Either you believe it or you don't.
Ron,
if you don't,
I've heard something inconsistent. I've also heard some other things that make me a little leery. What's going on?
Okay.
So I'm a little suspicious.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that.
For all the suggestions of politics, we are trying to treat this request fairly in light of those competing, the balance that exists between doing our job and letting the feds do theirs.
I want to thank the members of the commission, thank all of you for your patience. We will have better communications and cooperation going forward.
After rolling back the Quinn Maddox and tax hike, we need to modernize our sales tax. It is an inadequate system. An ideal tax code is one with low rates and a broad base. Illinois has the exact opposite. We have high income tax rates and a narrow sales tax base.
That's GOP candidate for Governor Bruce Rauner talking about his budget proposal, which includes a rollback of the income tax and then expanding Illinois' sales tax on services. And the audio before that from some of the fun partisan bickering that took place at a Legislative Audit Commission meeting in Chicago this week. Republicans and Democrats engaged in bipartisan bickering as they were talking about the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative and eventually voting to hold off investigating that until October. Those are a couple of the subjects we'll be discussing on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Brian Mackey, reporter with WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. Also, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio from our State House Bureau. And our guest joining us via telephone from Chicago, Dave McKinney of the Chicago Sun-Times. Dave, we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk with us.
Thanks, Bill.
You were in Chicago getting to witness some of the partisan bickering. First, quickly, we'll go back, quickly explain why we were having this hearing, and then we'll get into what was supposedly fun about it.
Well, I mean, this is yet another ripple from the February audit that Auditor General Bill Holland did on the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, which was a $55 million anti-violence program that Governor Quinn launched in October of 2010, a month before the election. And really, since that audit came out, there have just been a whole series of revelations that have, come out of the audit, plus the emails, plus, lots of other things that show that the, there was very little oversight in this program. There were large sums of money being steered to, for example, the spouse of Cook County Circuit Clerk Dorothy Brown, and programs that were really supposed to be set up to curb violence, but yet really, there's no evidence that it did that at all. And so what we saw happening this week in Chicago, the Audit Commission was trying to take action after having subpoenaed seven witnesses that were all former members of Governor Quinn's staff who were involved in the rollout and the implementation of NRI. They were on tap to testify in front of the Audit Commission. But at the last moment, last week, and then again this week, the Justice Department weighed in and said that, can you guys please hold off doing this for 90 days because there's an ongoing criminal investigation and anything these witnesses say potentially could impede that investigation. And so really what we had this week were 2 days of hearings that, where really the commission just sort of spun its wheels until finally coming to an agreement.
And that agreement was to not do anything until October and let the feds have their requests. But that first day, they spent 7 hours bickering back and forth, equal number Republicans and Democrats. What was all the arguing about? And was this just to continue making political hay of a program that apparently was politics to begin with?
Well, I mean, this was all heavily rooted in a gubernatorial campaign between Governor Quinn and Bruce Rauner. I mean, this, there was a question about whether to proceed in hearing the witnesses. And the Republicans initially wanted to press forward and hear from the witnesses, but then they pulled back from that position. And what we saw on Wednesday was this just, as you said, 7.5 hours of just clashing about, well, you know, should the witnesses come back in October, and should we hear from them? Basically, under what conditions should we hear from them? And what the Republicans wanted was they wanted to press ahead on October 8th, so long as the Justice Department didn't object, which seems like a sensible position. The Democrats, however, they wanted to proceed only if the Justice Department said it's okay to do that. And I mean, it's a very subtle difference, but what the reality, I think, is that, you know, typically the Justice Department is not in the habit of writing letters to committees that say, all right, we're done investigating, you do what you want to do. I mean, it was different than what the type of letter they had sent before saying, don't do this. And so, you know, we just saw a back and forth and over, you know, really just kind of minutia. And so the upshot after that day of futility, I guess, was that the Republicans pressed the Democrats to call the U.S. Attorney in Springfield, James Lewis, on Thursday morning and clear up this situation. And they did that. And what Lewis told them was that, you know, look, after 90 days, we're not going to seek an extension. Go ahead and do what you want to do after 90 days. And so that really kind of satisfied the Democrats. It got the Republicans what they wanted. And I think the takeaway from this is that you know, what it does is it puts this neighborhood recovery initiative back on the front burner just, you know, less than 4 weeks in front of the election.
Well, and there are some things that could happen in between, though, because we are waiting for the commission to put online and make public a bunch of emails. Many emails have been released already by the governor's office, but we're waiting from some from a former deputy chief of staff, Tony Irving. So we could see more being made of that. Clearly, the media has continued to, you included, Dave, doggedly pursue this, and there continues to be new revelations with that. So on the back burner, in a sense, until early October, which could be good for Quinn, but it also could be bad. As you noted, that's not a lot of recovery time prior to the election. But we may see more come from these emails and Republicans making hay of, did the governor's office disclose all that they were supposed to? When you hear Quinn talk, he continually says, everybody needs to be forthright. We need to be transparent about this. I have taken all of the steps to correct wrongdoing as soon as I learned about it. But Republicans saying, hey, we're not sure that he released all that he was supposed to in terms of the documentation about this program that they're looking for.
One thing we are seeing, as well as you mentioned, was this the partisan bickering. Mm-hmm. What many people might not realize is when it comes to these types of events, anytime there is outcry and complaints from one side, that's usually not spontaneous. Somebody has orchestrated that this is going to be our strategy, our protest. Is this Republicans that are doing this? And why are legislators getting so worked up about the governor's race?
Well, I mean, yeah, clearly the Republicans want to do everything in their power to help Rauner's campaign. And this to them, you know, this NRI issue is a very potent issue, they believe. And it was either a case of, you know, criminal conduct, which has not been proven or alleged yet, or a case of neglect and incompetence. And either one of those things, they believe, sells to voters. The Democrats, of course, they're more in a defensive posture. And what we saw happening Wednesday and to a lesser extent Thursday, but they were in a defensive posture, and they were trying to, you know, they would like to see this whole thing wrapped up and be done with. And you know, what's fascinating for the, like, students of student government or students of state government is that this is one committee, the Legislative Audit Commission, that is among a handful that is bipartisan, and it's split right down the middle. And you think about Republicans at Springfield over the past decade plus, they've been in the minority in just about every venue, the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court. And what we saw here was that the Democrats couldn't exert their will without Republican help, and Republicans couldn't do the same. So they were forced into this kind of mode where they had to cooperate or nothing would get done. And I think if nothing got done, that narrative would hurt Democrats because it would look, you know, pretty obvious that they were trying to block things.
It's speculative at this point, but I kind of wonder if the lopsided power split we've seen in Springfield and the sort of politicization, if you will, of this process will make the Democrats consider whether they want to continue having a bipartisan, equally split legislative mm-hmm. audit commission, and also the committee, I believe, that reviews the administrative rules for the state agencies is also evenly split. I mean, they do have vast supermajorities in the legislature. Will we see them move in this way? I don't know. But, I mean, of course, what the Republicans really wanted here and they didn't get yet is that somebody referred to it, I saw this week, as a perp walk, right? Because no matter what happens, either they get people testifying about the terrible things that happened with this program or they get them pleading the fifth. And it's kind of great for, you know, future campaign ads to use against Governor Quinn. Go ahead.
You know, I think it is. It's clearly political, and the whole program was political. Again, that's why there's investigations into this, because the allegations, or the perception at least, is that by giving grants to organizations and communities that were less violent than others, that this was a sort of get out the vote or campaign strategy on the Quinn side. So, I mean, from the very beginning, it's potentially political in that way. But to me, it's beyond that. It's also, as Dave indicated, the rare that Republicans are able to exert any sort of control. And I think probably a lot of just human emotion and built up angst and anger over continually getting the boot from Democrats and watching programs go forward with Democrats not seeking any sort of Republican input. And so this is a rare occasion for them to be able to have influence. But also, I mean, just the frustrations of years of being in that regard, it's so far downtrodden that it's more than just politics. I think a lot of it is really very true feelings and frustrations about state government that Republicans haven't been able to do much about because they're in such a minority.
And Dave, I'd like to ask you on that very point. Of course, the Republicans are alleging this was, you know, in their words, a political slush fund for Governor Quinn in his 2010 campaign. His opponent in 2010 was State Senator Bill Brady, who is on this committee, right? Dave, can you talk about how, you know, his mood and affect during these hearings?
Well, I mean, that is an irony, isn't it, when you think about how, you know, what we now know will happen. I mean, you know, this program hit a month before that election. Brady insists that it swung the election. And now we're going to see it hit a month before election again. And will it, you know, will this issue swing an election? I don't know. Brady asked a lot of questions. I mean, he was, you know, I don't think he was, you know, it didn't strike me that he was seeking out the limelight or the cameras or anything here, but I mean, he was just being, you know, pretty dutiful in the way he was asking questions. It didn't stand out to me. I mean, I think, you know, what potentially these witnesses could reveal that we haven't seen yet, we didn't see this in the audit that Holland put out, was what extent did Quinn himself direct all of this? You know, right now what we have is a situation where we know it's crept up pretty much to his chief of staff, his former chief of staff, Jack Lavin, and former deputy chief of staff, Tony Irving, and some other advisors in the governor's office. What we don't see is that smoking gun and those emails that Amanda referred to. I mean, you don't see Quinn himself directing money, for example, to the Chicago Area Project, which is one of the key providers that was at the heart of a lot of this, you know, kind of skullduggery that was going on. So, I think that's what we need to watch for in October, clearly, and it's something that just it would be a massive break if that were to emerge.
Now, Dave, I'm curious, what role are the legislative leaders seeming to play in this JCAR event?
Well, in the Audit Commission, they want to...
Audit Commission, I apologize,
yeah,
getting my acronyms mixed up.
Well, you know, what's clear is that, you know, they are, they were controlling things. I mean, you could see it from just the staffers who were on hand for this event. I mean, one of House Speaker Mike Madigan's top policy advisors and really political advisors, Will Cousineau, was in attendance here, as was Dave Gross, who is Senate President Cullerton's chief of staff. And so we also had the top lawyers for the caucuses at this event. So, I mean, it was very, very much being dealt with at the leader level, even though, you know, most of the public debate was occurring between these legislators, rank and file legislators.
You know, I'm curious if there was also some testimony from Scott Drury, who's a state representative, a former federal prosecutor. It kind of almost became a joke this year. He used to begin so many debates where he would say, you know, I'm a former federal prosecutor. People began ribbing him about that, but they actually called on him to testify as a former federal prosecutor. What do we know about the interest in why the U.S. attorney wants these, you know, doesn't want this line of questioning to happen now for the next 90 days at least?
Well, I mean, what we know pretty much is what we're hearing from the legislators who have spoken directly with Lewis, the U.S. attorney. And it sounds like Lewis has been trying to make the case to these guys that he needs 90 days in order to do the interviews that he wants to do with key witnesses in whatever cases he's pursuing. And, of course, I mean, there's a criminal grand jury that's been convened in Springfield to, you know, probe this. We don't, you know, all we know are, you know, that records have been subpoenaed about it. We know that the state's attorney in Cook County has been looking into it. But we don't know specifically who or what. I mean, we know that some of the records involving Clerk Brown's husband, Benton Cook, have been sought. We know that the Chicago Area Project, again, is another group that has caught some scrutiny. But that's really what Lewis communicated to these legislators, that he needed more time to basically do the interviews and have FBI people do the interviews that needed to occur.
So, Dave, since you're not going to be with us at the end of the show for notes from the field, I'm just curious, what were some of those kind of takeaways or things that you brought away from watching this hearing in person?
Well, I mean, again, clearly it was a situation where the political stakes were exceptionally high. I mean, everybody, I think, is looking at this NRI issue as you know, kind of the wild card in the governor's race. It's something that neither side has control of, because the U.S. Attorney's Office is directing traffic here. And so I think, you know, the takeaway was that the governor's office is tiptoeing around all of this. They're trying to look like they've done the right thing. And you know, of course, the day that the hearing occurred on Wednesday, Governor Quinn signed the bill that got out of the legislature that would impose new disclosure requirements and other things on state grants. So, I mean, he's wanting to look as proactive and engage in as much damage control as he can over this. But clearly the Republicans think that they have found the Achilles heel of the Democrats, at least in the governor's office, with this issue, and expect to see them between now and November at every turn trying to exploit that.
The Chicago Sun-Times, Dave McKinney, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to stop by. This is State Week. Coming up, Bruce Rauner comes out with some of his specifics on taxes.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues, a public affairs magazine deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. This month's environmental issue looks at the state's endangered species list, also climate change, and a parks update. Illinois Issues and its companion publication, The Roster of State and Government Officials, is available at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on this half of State Week, Brian Mackey, Amanda Venicky, and I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Gubernatorial candidate Bruce Rauner gave a few more specifics when it came to budget this week in terms of what he would do with taxes. He said he'd roll back the state income tax, but he did add that he would expand Illinois sales tax on some services. Brian and Amanda, give me a few more specifics on what we have here.
Well, so yes. So Bruce Rauner, first, let's just say that we've been really waiting for something like this. That's something that I want to get up front, that Rauner has had before he had this, you know, big press conference where he had a couple of chickens by his side and unveiled his plans for righting the ship of state government, as he framed it. And it really was lacking in pretty much anything. It was a lot of you know, reversing tax credits that had been proposed before and never gone anywhere, that sort of thing. So this is the first kind of real agenda with specifics and details that we've gotten from Rauner. He says it would bring in about $577 million through taxing some services. This is something that Illinois has talked about for quite some time, to quote unquote modernize, as we heard at the top of the program, is what Rauner called it, the tax code, that as the economy evolves from something that's less based on goods and more based on services, begin to tax those things and look for revenue. That said, he also didn't quite say what he would do to make up the losses other than growth that would result from a rollback of the income tax increase that brings in, you know, billions of dollars versus a half billion or so. Interestingly, we've heard, and he was, you know, elected on the premise of getting rid of that 2011 income tax increase and still wants to do that, but he's given more details. It kind of echoes, I think this is something similar to what Comptroller Judy Bartopinka, another Republican, has said. We want to get rid of it, but just not quite yet. He didn't say it outright, but over 4 years, roll it back down.
And so,
those are some of the specifics.
And people have been saying about, you know, well, that's an increase then, right? If you're, because there's this whole semantic debate, right? Because right now, under current law, the tax rate is, I believe, 5%, and it's going to roll back to 3.75% on January 1st. So people are saying, well, there's an automatic tax cut. If you want to keep it at 5%, that's an increase. But it sounds like, from what we're hearing from Mr. Rauner, we don't have a number, like you said, Amanda, but that he, too, under that, you know, rhetoric, will be increasing taxes as well and keeping the income tax higher for at least a period of years as it begins to roll back gradually. I also think it's interesting to look at the list of things in particular he had, you know, with this service tax, right? So Illinois taxes, you buy a pack of chewing gum, a washing machine, whatever it is, you pay a certain amount of sales tax. But if you get a haircut or you have your yacht towed or perhaps you, you know, buy a billboard advertising, those services are not taxed. Some of these things he would tax, some of these he would not. Haircuts are not included. They do seem, this list seems somewhat targeted at, for lack of a better way to phrase it, either businesses or more affluent people. One of them is commercial linen supply, which I guess is, you know, supplying hotels and nursing homes, I would imagine, with bedding. Like I mentioned, billboards, radio and television advertising is something that would be taxed under his plan. Mini storage, marine towing, including tugboats. Not a service I've had to call on very much in my life. Public relations agencies.
But something that's interesting there, Brian, is that so maybe geared toward the more affluent, but probably also, and I don't know this for a fact, but probably also poll tested. These are the sort of things that your
Absolutely.
Average person isn't going to get very worked up about linen services being taxed. That said, who knows what effect that could have, for example, on the hotel industry, on the nursing home industry, on the tourism industry, where all – and that's the thing. And every single one of these, like everything else in state government, it affects those parties so completely. But it's also a very much a matter of perception and voting. And one of his previous plans, for example, I mentioned the tax credits that he wants to roll back. He wants to get rid of one that allows for purchasing of racehorses. And that's something, you know, I've been interviewing this guy who's involved with the horse racing industry that says, hey, we're struggling as is. That would further decimate the industry. So things that look good may or may not be actually good for policy. I do think another thing, Brian, that Rauner in this latest blueprint, as he frames it, would tax, and part of his previous one, he's kind of going after the media, actually. He would tax advertising on TV and radio, and he also would get rid of a tax on newsprint industry. And I do think that that's
a tax deduction.
Pardon me. Thank you. But an
actually,
interesting move for a candidate.
Yeah.
That is looking for
right,
the
old
endorsements
saw,
at this point in time.
The old saw being you don't pick a fight with people who buy ink by the barrel, or I guess in our case, electricity by the kilowatt. But and you know, attorneys is another thing he's targeting. Mm-hmm. And that reminds me, you go back to Rod Blagojevich with his attempted gross receipts tax. I was working for a legal publication at the time, and attorneys fought very hard against that. They were very troubled by the idea because most attorneys are formed as partnerships. They're taxed individually as like a sole business owner would be. This would apply presumably another tax on their firm. They're going to claim they're being double taxed. And that is, you know, yet another interest groups. And he's also saying in this blueprint, as you put it, Amanda, that he wants to raise the minimum wage gradually, which is – we can come back to that. But one of the things he wants to do in order to do that is impose caps on non-economic damages in lawsuits, which is something the Illinois Supreme Court has repeatedly said you can't do in this state. So there are a lot of powerful interests that presumably would fight very hard to keep these things from being passed into law.
And he's been framed as the candidate that's pro-business, that clearly you've seen business interests take a shining to. They've been upset and frustrated by Governor Pat Quinn for things, for example, like a lack of what they say is true change to Illinois' workers' compensation. And yet he's getting with this announcement, just came out right after and on the same stage as the Manufacturers Association endorsed him. So he still appears to be the sweetheart of some business, and a service that he does not propose taxing would be the financial industry, which is worthy, where Rauner made a lot of his cash, all of it. And so that is just every time that you propose something specific, you're, as you noted, picking off kind of an interest group. And it's an opportunity that already Quinn is pouncing on. The governor had an totally unrelated event, and at the end framed back around and said, Rauner is working for the top people. I'm working for the middle class, for you, you hardworking individuals. And he's looking to go regressive with his expansion of the sales tax on services, something that Quinn, during his budget address, eliminated it as an option. He said, no way, no how will I go for that.
We'll take some time now for a couple of notes from the field, and I'll start with you, Brian Mackey.
Yeah, we got a notice this week that Bruce Rauner has a special guest coming in for a fundraiser, Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. He is a kind of a star in Republican circles, the whole traffic scandal notwithstanding, but he is obviously still talked about as somebody who could potentially run for president someday. This is going to be in Chicago, of course, right downtown at the Hilton. Not cheap, though, to get in to see him. If you want the VIP reception, $2,500 per couple, $1,500 per individual. For the general reception, $500 per individual. One thing I would love to know, be a fly on the wall, is see if they'll be talking pensions. Obviously, Chris Christie in New Jersey taking a very different approach from Illinois and kind of doing some of the bad things that a lot of Republicans have been criticizing for years in Illinois are happening now to the pension system in New Jersey.
And Amanda.
We have had some rules changes in Illinois, which sounds mundane, but could actually be a big deal. For example, Illinois finally getting going on establishing how the medical marijuana program will work. So that occurred. And then also some changes to the concealed carry, well, not the law, but basically how it's going to work, and trying to throw a bone to individuals who've applied to carry a gun and license, a gun in public, but were denied a license. Some rules that say there's an opportunity for them to go before the Concealed Carry Licensing Review Board and basically appeal the decision. That said, it appears as if gun groups still aren't happy with that and say it hasn't gone far enough in giving them due process rights.
And quickly, Amanda, term limits don't look like they'll be on the ballot this November.
Hard to say. Anything is possible, but the Rauner campaign, for all practical purposes, had tried to appeal a lower court's decision that his term limits constitutional amendment was unconstitutional in itself directly to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court didn't give any comment as to why, but said no, it would not take that case. Rauner's lawyers are going to appeal, this time to a lower court, but the deadline is really tight. It would be tough for them to get everything done and finished and before the August 22nd deadline of certifying the ballot for November's election.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guest, Dade McKinney of the Chicago Sun-Times. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.